All right, well, welcome back to the Double Take podcast. Today, The Usual Suspects, which is a fantastic movie. Everybody loves it. Let me just give a quick introduction here. Back in the seat for the trifecta is Marty. Marty, what's up, man?
I'm feeling great. This is a particular favorite movie of mine, but I went with particularly, which doesn't make sense in the sentence grammatically, and then everything went crazy.
You were a teacher.
Yeah, dude, bad scene.
Nice.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, third time's a charm for you, right? We had you on Chef, which was episode 2. We had you on most recently Ferris Bueller's Day Off, episode 6. Everybody's favorite day off, right? So welcome back again.
Thank you.
Yep. With me always is Terrence. What's up, my man?
How's it going? Yeah, out of those three movies, this one, there's a little bit more killing and crime in this one compared to them. But yeah, I'm
a little less family friendly, would you say?
Yeah, no, don't put this one on around
depending on your family.
Yeah,
sure. Well, all right, we got Usual Suspects. This movie came out in 95. Incredible movie. It was one of the first movies where it had kind of that twist at the end, right? Oh, and before I forget, too, we actually have a live studio audience member here today. She's not mic'd up, but Dee is in the background. So if you hear some woman with a strong New York accent making sounds or laughs, she's number one fan. That's it. So she's sitting in with us today. Terrence, why don't you give us an overview of what this movie's about in the event that someone doesn't know?
Sure. This movie is one of the great puzzle box movies of all time. The whole story revolves around a group of criminals that is brought in for questioning, and they end up getting together, the usual suspects, and they get together and pull off a couple jobs. And as that is happening, everything falls apart, as they often do in these kinds of crime thriller movies, and you end up coming to the reveal. There's somebody, it's like a mythical figure, Kaiser Sose. Who is this guy? How is he controlling everything? Chaz Palminteri is the detective that is questioning Kevin Spacey, and you're kind of seeing it from his point of view the whole time. And yeah, this has got one of the great endings of all time. Yeah, a lot of the fun is watching the movie and then thinking about, oh, what are all the clues that I missed along the way? Thinking back on it, watching it a second time. We talk about movies you want to watch over and over again. This one is like top of the list. So
yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that recap, sir.
You're welcome.
For me, I feel like I'd love a good heist movie. There's multiple heists in this movie, which is great. Like, they just kind of combined a bunch of things in here. Marty, what's this movie mean to you, man? Like, you said it was one of your all-time faves. Like, what do you love about this movie?
Two things I love about this movie are, I think, three things. One is you're never going to see a better ensemble cast movie.
Okay.
You could say, who had the biggest part? Okay, Kevin Spacey. After that, who had the biggest part? You can't tell me. They all had their part to play, and it really just seamlessly moved together as an ensemble. Second one, this is one of those movies you talk about for a while.
Oh, yeah.
After you saw it with whomever you saw it with. And the other part I like about this movie is, what did we just watch? What exactly did we just see? Does any of that make sense to anyone? And it makes perfect sense, except it doesn't. You know what I mean? So this movie's a think piece and an action movie all in one.
Yeah. This is why you go to the movies. Like, that reveal at the end that just knocks you off your feet. And, I mean, I'm sure it's hard to go back to the first time you watch it. But when you do, you're trying to think about things. Oh, who is Kaiser Sose? Is it one of these guys? Is it somebody else? Is there going to be some kind of twist to it? But, like, still, I don't think anybody could see this one coming. And, like, you're just kind of left floored at the end, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he pulled it off. I can't believe I missed all these signs, just like Kuyan, the detective, missed the signs. So it's just such a satisfying movie in that regard.
Yeah, I agree with both your takes on this movie, right? The budget for this was about $6 million. It pulled in about $67 million internationally in the box office. Overall, that was about 78th in 1995, like, which seems odd that this movie would be the 78th grossing movie.
Wild,
I like to look into what other movies were out in 95, right? So in 95, we had Toy Story was number one, right? You had Apollo 13, Batman Forever. Like, if you go, like, Batman Forever doesn't hold a candle to this movie.
Yeah,
right? It's just awful, right? Pocahontas, of all things. And then Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Like, these are the top five movies in 95.
Very different movies.
Yeah. Like, where was our population thinking in those, you know, watching those movies?
Not a lot of
movies. People
going to see the Toy Story, Usual Suspects double feature.
Yeah, you didn't see that much at the drive-in, for sure. Yep, that's fair. This was actually, this part caught me kind of off guard. Ebert gave this 1.5 stars. I don't know if you looked at that.
Whoa.
This was on his most hated list for this movie. And I didn't bother reading why that is, because I don't care.
Right.
But I was just like, what? Like, what? This guy's just crazy, man.
It's tough. Even the best miss sometimes.
But it was directed by Bryan Singer, who went on to do a bunch of decent movies after this. Terrence, what do you know about the director?
I just associate him with the X-Men movies. He directed a bunch of them. I think his career, I don't know if he's doing a whole lot now. He's had some personal stuff. Spacey, the cast is a little bit troubling after the fact here. But, yeah, Bryan Singer to me was this movie, and the X-Men movies was what he was known for.
X2 was probably one of my favorite X-Men movies, and my second favorite overall, but the best opening scene, in my opinion.
Okay,
that was with Nightcrawler in the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just zipping around, taking out Secret Service agents and everything.
It was awesome. It was awesome. But the best X-Men movie, in my opinion, to date, was Days of Future Past.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned that before.
I like that one a lot. So you said, Marty, earlier you were saying how, you know, we're gonna build Kevin Spacey as the star here. I'm so mad that he's like a pedophile creep or whatever he is, because he's such an incredible actor.
That's exactly how I feel too. It's like,
I'm so mad.
Always so good, and it's like, why are you such a dick? Why can't you just control yourself?
Right. He had such a run. Right. I was looking at his movies. Right. So he did this in '95. Also in '95, he did Outbreak. He did Seven, which is a whole other thing. He did A Time to Kill. These are all '95. He was in that's when they released. I don't know if you filmed them in that same year. Right. In '97, he had L.A. Confidential. And 98, The Negotiator, which is a fantastic movie. That's coming on this show, by the way, at some point.
Yeah.
He did A Bug's Life, if you're into that. American Beauty, Pay It Forward. And then this one starts tailing off a little bit. Superman Returns.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, not horrible, but he did pretty good. And then 21. Do you ever see 21?
Yeah, sure. Blackjack movie. That's one of the first ones I mentioned on my list for him.
Okay.
You know me, Vegas, baby.
have you read that book? That's one of the few books I've read.
Bringing Down the House.
That's Ben Mesrick.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have it sitting on the shelf over there. It's such an incredible story.
Yeah, great book, great movie.
Yeah. But anyway, so I'm so mad about his personal problems. Yeah. You know what I mean? But
it's tough to talk about guys like this after the fact. Like, for me, I try, like, if Kevin Spacey was making a new movie now, I don't know if I would go see it just because of the stigma attached to it. But he's been in so many movies in the past, and I know there's some people that they'll see a name like that or like Michael Jackson or something. They're just like, I'm going to just reject whatever art they made already, and like, I'm not going to go back and watch Kevin Spacey's movies. I'm not going to go back and listen to Thriller or Mel Gibson's movies or whatever. I respect that. You can't really argue against it. But for me, I try to just detach it from that. It's like, listen, this is a great movie. He's great in it. You can't argue he's not, just because of whatever sins or misdeeds he had. And I mean, I think they were even going on back then, so that makes it even trickier. But for me, I try not to let it, it sounds a little shallow to say, but I try not to let it ruin my enjoyment of the movies they have been in, because like this, just that list you said right there, like every one of those is just
fantastic,
top of the list. Yeah. And for many reasons, but one of the biggest in every one of them is he's so good at it. He's a phenomenal actor.
For this role too, he actually glued his fingers together.
Yep.
To have the cerebral palsy or whatever. So he dove into his role, which, you know, we talked about. I love when actors do that, whether it's, you know, Keanu Reeves learning how to shoot or doing his own stunts, things like that. But when they dive in, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I read that same thing. Something like he filed down his shoes to help kind of promote the limp that he walked with and everything. Like,
yep.
He goes all in when he gets a role.
Yeah, it worked out well. I think it worked out really well. You know, and the good thing about having him in this, I don't know if you guys read this, but so you don't know, like, you know, you're just saying, like, you're waiting for the reveal of, oh, it's Kevin Spacey, he's Kaiser Soze, whatever, right? But, like, he was a nobody actor at this point. Like, this was...
Yeah, all those movies came out that year, you said, so he wasn't yet...
Like, no one knew who he was, so...
Wasn't he uncredited in Seven to kind of preserve the mystery of that, too?
Yep.
He was in, and I don't know if this predates this movie, but I believe he was in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, another great movie.
As the dopey office manager,
yeah.
But that he had a speaking role, But yeah, certainly he was not. He was. He wasn't.
Not
a
the headliner
part of it.
There. With
no,
Alec
a lot
Baldwin
of big names
and Jack Lemmon and yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because if you stuck a big name actor in this role, then you know he's Kaiser Soze.
Yeah.
If that's you know Dustin Hoffman or something.
Yeah.
You
after know, the fact, now we look back, it's like, oh, Kevin Spacey. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to draw too much attention to it. You don't want to ruin. And we'll talk about the clues that led up to it that maybe people
yep.
potentially could have pieced it together, but I don't think for the most part people got this reveal before.
I want to hear your list after. We'll get into that because when I rewatched it again, I started writing down where I thought there was clues. Like, now that you know how it ends,
yeah.
what are the clues? That
That's one of the most fun things about this movie is going yeah. back.
Yep. So Gabriel Byrne was, you could probably say, another star of this movie.
He's been in a lot of stuff, but not a lot stands out. Like, for me, I think of him in this, and I think of him in Hereditary. I feel like I always come to a horror movie first.
Okay.
And you give me that glassy-eyed look.
But like, I missed that one, too.
Yeah, if you don't like horror movies, don't watch that. You'll never sleep again. But, yeah, he's the father in that movie that awful things happen to him. But, okay. Yeah, but I feel like I see him pop up a lot. Marty, you have a relationship with him at all?
Not in the slightest. I looked at his list, and he was in, I believe, Mulholland Falls, which I've seen, and don't remember him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he did that. He's done one movie.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
And you know what? I did see one.
He was Keaton. That was it.
Yeah. There was one on the list. He's in Miller's Crossing, which.
That's it. Not Mulholland Falls. He was Miller's Crossing.
I think
Crossing.
It might have been Mulholland Falls also. I can't remember.
See, it shows you what I know. I mean, it shows you how impactful he is in my life.
But yeah, I love the Coen Brothers, and I see a lot of people have put that as like their number one Coen Brothers movie, and somehow that one has evaded me. I need to watch that one.
Okay.
So
he had a small role in Enemy of the State, which I thought you might have picked that out.
I saw him on the list, but I love Enemy of the State. It's been a while since I've seen it, and I'm like, I know Gene Hackman, I know Will Smith, I know a couple people. I couldn't place where he's got a distinctive face, Gabriel Byrne. I would know him if I saw him, but it's been a while, so I couldn't place who he was in that movie. So
he was kind of out of place in that movie, to be honest.
Yeah.
But he's in it for like 2 seconds, and then he's out. You know who I love is Chaz Palminteri.
Yes.
Instead of Pal.
Yeah.
My pronunciation.
That
right?
was perfect. Yeah.
All right. Well, my pronunciation checker here. Yeah, this guy's awesome. I love this guy in like pretty much everything that he's in. You know, my favorite role for him is A Bronx Tale, which coming up soon on the Double Take. By
yeah,
the
that's
way.
Right.
And this is probably my second favorite role for him. He's just awesome in this. Like, he's kind of like at the end of it all, he's kind of an idiot.
In right? this, yeah.
But I just like, he as an actor, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's always got that like macho, like Italian tough guy, maybe gangster, maybe mafia, something like that. But like, he's got a lot of authority. He's not someone you ever mess with. I don't know if either of you guys have ever seen a movie called Pool Hall Junkies. It's not like a huge release or anything, but I love that movie. And he's a central figure. Him and Christopher Walken are in it. It's all about pool. Like, we talk about rounders doing for poker. Like, Pool Hall Junkies was that for me. Me and my best friend, we watched Pool Hall Junkies endlessly. And he's so good in that one.
One of the things about Chaz Palminteri's character, Agent Kuyon, is I believed that character from the second he opened his mouth.
Yeah.
That guy goes from 0 to 60 so fast in that as you're buying every word out of his mouth, he's so frustrated. He's been chasing this Kaiser Soze forever. And nothing, he did, you know what I mean? I never for 1 second.
Well, no, he's chasing Keaton forever.
Chasing Keaton forever.
Keaton's the one he's after.
And then the name Kaiser Soze starts popping up, and he's like, well, what is this about? Yeah.
And he says, I never caught him acting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought he was one of the most believable tough guy cops ever.
Oh, yeah. I read that the part was written for him, and then he initially, I think, had to turn it down because he had other commitments, and they looked at De Niro, they looked at Walken, a couple other guys, and then they were able to fit it in. And I read that he did all his scenes in 1 week just so he could fit it in. They wanted him so bad that, like, they were okay with that. And so, yeah, he was a perfect fit for this role. He really embodied it right from the get-go.
Did you know he was in a band back in the day?
I cannot picture him
playing
an instrument or singing.
Yeah, right? He was a singer, and his band was called Razzmatazz.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That's a deep cut,
man. Can't believe they didn't
make it. That is a deep cut.
Yep.
What kind of, do I dare ask what kind of music? Like, is it like a jazz
quartet? I don't know that answer. I don't know. You'll have to.
Barbershop quartet
you'll have
from
to
Skokie,
do
Illinois?
You'll have to do your own deep diving there.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a bouncer at the Limelight, which is a club in, was
see,
a club.
Bouncer, I can see him at.
Yeah.
That's a more fitting.
It's an old club in New York.
Yeah.
I think they moved it. It was like, and I was looking it up after to see. It was like in a church or something like that.
The Limelight.
Oh, you've been there?
Every
Friday night,
I played the Limelight once.
Okay.
When I was in a band in college, We were an opening act at the Limelight. It is indeed was indeed a church that they just hollowed out, except they kept the step up to the altar.
Oh wow!
As the stage,
perfect.
And it had stained glass, and it was when I went there, it was black candles everywhere. It was goth heaven. Not that we were a goth band, but it was just goth heaven. It is now, look it up, an IHOP.
All right.
That is no joke. They took down the Limelight, put up an IHOP.
More importantly, what did you play in a band?
I played rhythm guitar.
Rhythm guitar.
I still have a fantastic cherry red Telecaster.
Okay.
It's a thing of beauty.
All right. Good for you, man. Can you still play? You still play guitar now?
I can hack around, but I would never play in front of human beings. You know, no, I can hack around.
We'll see. We'll see what we can do. All right, now we get to my favorite actor of all time, one of the Benicio del Toro.
Oh, dude.
I thought you were going to say Stephen Baldwin, and I was very worried.
Well, no. I said favorite of all.
Like, go ahead. Yeah, that's why I was worried there.
What are you saying?
I say he'll flip you.
He'll what?
Flip you. Flip you for real.
This guy is awesome. Like, everything he's in is awesome. You know, like, he just brings such a, like, this is probably my favorite role for him. So this is why I love this movie more, because there's two or three roles that are just people are the best. But have you ever seen The Way of the Gun?
No.
Most people haven't.
Right? Yeah.
It's actually pretty star-studded cast in that, too. It's him and Ryan Phillippe. So look it up afterwards. The opening
Brad
scene.
Pitt, that one?
No, Brad Pitt, but James Caan's in it.
Okay.
There's a handful of people you recognize. I think Juliette Lewis is in there.
Okay.
Wow.
There's probably seven or eight names or faces that you'll be like, oh, it's that guy, you know, and you'll know. It's not a good movie, like, overall. Like, it's not a, like, huge plot-driven movie.
Yeah.
But him and Ryan Phillippe, or DeFillippe, well, I can't pronounce his last name, whatever. But, yeah, they're just idiots with guns, and, you know, they break the law, shoot people. The opening scene is with Sarah Silverman's in it.
And, oh wow!
I'm gonna play. When we're done here, I'm playing the opening scene for you. But
I'm trying to picture any scene with Benicio del Toro and Sarah Silverman in it, and it's just not computing.
You don't find that a match made in heaven somehow? You don't see those two Legos fitting together?
Not exactly.
No, it's short.
Me neither.
but yeah, I mean, Sicario, he's awesome. I mean,
Sicario, yeah.
There you go. See, I don't pronounce.
That's okay. We know where you're going.
Yeah, but in this movie, perfect fit for this movie. I love his role in this movie as Fenster. Awesome.
Anytime you see him, he's like, we talk about actors that go for it. Like, he never just shows up and reads his lines. Like, there's always some kind of peculiar quirk, like this, the way he speaks, like you can barely understand him.
Yep.
There's other movies he's got like this real gravelly voice. Like, I know him. He's in so many things, but I associate him with Sin City, which is another huge ensemble cast that he's like this sort of abusive boyfriend to I can't think of her name right now, Brittany Murphy. But he's just like a very particular character. He's never just showing up and just going through the motions. Like, for this one, I read that he basically figured out that his whole reason for his character was just to be there, to be the first one killed, to kind of set everything in motion for Kaiser Soze. And so he made the decision. He's like, all right, well, my lines don't matter. Like, so I'm just going to make a particular choice here and just kind of mumble them. And like, a lot of the lines from other guys reacting to him were just because they literally could not understand what he was saying.
How many the keys, you cocksucker?
In English, please.
Excuse me?
In English.
How many the fucking keys, you cocksucker? What the fuck?
Yeah,
he's
great.
This guy is in this movie, Benicio is the human closed caption, because I had to say, all right, forget it. We got to go back, and we got to put on closed captions.
You did it?
Oh yeah.
I know Mark.
The first time I saw it,
I didn't do it, but yeah, it's tough to understand him.
Oh yeah. I'm like, what now?
Yep.
What is that dude saying?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, like, who let him do that? They just said, Benicio, whatever you want
to
do.
It stands out, though. Yeah, it makes it memorable.
Any scene he's in, anytime he opens his mouth, he steals the scene.
Yeah,
just
if
like
he was
that.
Just a regular part of the group, just a regular talking criminal, like, he would be probably the last person we mentioned, because everyone else kind of has a thing. Like,
no.
Spacey ends up being the guy. Keaton's the leader.
Right.
Byrne is the leader. Stephen Baldwin's just insane. Like, he goes nuts. Like, so he's got his own thing to stand out.
So let's get into Stephen Baldwin. He's one of, what, seven Baldwin brothers or something? I don't know how many there are.
There's a bunch, yeah.
This is, yeah.
We don't have the mathematics available to us right now to figure out how many Baldwins there are.
Yeah, I've left my abacus at home.
Right.
So, you know, I thought he was really good in this role.
It's awesome.
And I don't know if he's just an idiot or I don't know what his situation is, but like he's not in a lot of things. Like, and if he is, they're just junk.
It's a lot of straight to DVD kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Alec Baldwin, can you name any like famous brothers that like both of them are famous movie stars? Like, I feel like Alec Baldwin like kind of just steals the limelight. So it's like the Hemsworth, like Chris Hemsworth gets the big roles and then like Liam Hemsworth is it. He's in a lot of kind of minor things. And so, yeah, I think there's only enough room for one brother in each family.
You might be right. Does Tom Cruise have a brother somewhere that we don't know
about?
Yeah,
he's making straight to DVD movies with Frank Stallone right now.
He's working.
Oh, well played. Frank Stallone blast. No cool. Not cool.
So, yeah, I thought that after this movie, like this was 95, so I thought maybe he would have been in more action-y type movies because he played a good kind of psycho dude.
Unhinged, with lunatic.
Yeah, like how come he's not in more heist movies? I don't care if you've been typecast. Play the same character in seven other movies and you're going to make
Put him in Ocean's 11 or something.
Right?
Right.
Everyone knows Matthew McConaughey, but you don't know him like we do here on the Mastering McConaughey podcast. You probably know McConaughey from his stint doing rom-coms, but did you know that he played Gary Oldman's twin brother in a movie where they both have dwarfism? Or that he played opposite Al Pacino in a sports betting thriller that has 22% on Rotten Tomatoes? Or that he starred in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie? Here at the Mastering McConaughey podcast, we go through McConaughey's filmography while also exploring his philosophy, and we talk about his sweet abs a little too. Check us out on Instagram and TikTok at MasteringMPod and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So Kevin Pollak, love this guy, came up as a comedian. Have you ever heard his impressions?
Oh, dude.
Back in the day.
He's the original Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's so fantastic. He does everybody. He does Walken, De Niro, Nicholson. You ever see him do Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
To the max.
But my favorite character for him is always A Few Good Men.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, did he get that impression before or after working with him on A Few Good Men? That probably helped.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, like I said, he'll just always be Weinberg to me.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys you're always happy when he shows up. I know he's in Casino. He's in Grumpy Old Man. He's in a bunch of things, like usually minor roles, usually supporting roles. But yeah, he always brings something to the
table.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to pronounce this guy's name wrong, but Pete Postlethwaite played Kobayashi.
Yeah.
So he passed away a few years ago too, but he's another good, like, I don't say character actor, but he just kind of shows up.
Yeah, he is.
Plays a good role.
Right.
And gets
I think of him from Inception. He's Cillian Murphy's dad that's why they need to incept that whole idea into him in the first place. But
Inception, he was in Jurassic Park, The Lost World, which was the second one with Goldblum.
Alien movie he was in.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was in. He was the florist in The Town.
Yes.
So
yeah, that was second on my list behind Inception, actually.
Yep. So he's been in some stuff. I mean, he's been in more than that, but you know, those are the ones. Like you said, those are the ones that stand out for me that I know him from.
Yeah, I think our first clue of trying to figure this movie out should have been that guy does not look like a Kobayashi. When I rewatch it, and it's like, yeah, the lawyer Kobayashi. I'm like, where'd they get with that name from? And of course, it revealed how he gets the name, but. Yeah, that doesn't have the look
Asian
of a Kobayashi.
For a Kobayashi. And then, of course, you got Gus Fringe is in this movie.
Yep.
Right?
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yep. Yep. So he had a pretty good role, I thought, in this. Like, he was, you know, he did a lot of the detecting, if you will. Like, he was the one doing all the groundwork for Chaz, you know, Chaz and Bataz.
I feel like his role in Breaking Bad has become so... It's when you think of him that everybody, like, that's what you think of. Right. And it's kind of overshadowed. But he's been in a lot of things. He's had a great career. He was doing a lot of things even before this. But, like, once Breaking Bad hit and Gus Fring had, like, such a big role and a big part of that story, like, that's all you can see him as. But he's a great actor. That's not a knock on him. Like, oh, he can only play one part. He's great. He's in The Mandalorian. I know you're a Star Wars guy, Mark.
Yep.
He's great in that. But he's been in, like, Spike Lee movies. He does all kinds of different things. He's always really good.
Now that you know who he is, you notice him more.
Yeah,
because he looks a lot different in this movie than he does in like Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
and Better Call Saul. You know, the spinoff of that. So yeah, but good role for him. I also liked the Peter Green. He played Redfoot.
Oh yeah.
So I thought that he's been in a lot of things too, like
Pulp Fiction.
You ever see Judgment Night?
No, think I know that one.
He was the villain in The Mask with Jim Carrey.
Oh yeah, that's right.
There, yeah.
He does a lot with very little in Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
You don't forget him, But he doesn't have much to say. He's only there for like a couple scenes.
Yeah.
And then leather jacket. That's about it.
I thought this was a good juicy role for him. And there was a couple other, we'll get into the castings, but there was a couple other people that were trying to get that role,
mm-hmm.
you know, for just that reason. And they wanted to turn it into that,
like, you know, because
it's kind of that gangster. He's like, he's a fence, but, you know, like I said, like you, that tough guy kind of approach to things. So there was a lot of guys in 95 that could have took that role, and but he got it. So good for him. All right. So you talked about the plot of this movie. We know what's going on, right? Any other actors, by the way, that I missed that you wanted to give a shout out to?
I think we got them all.
But yeah, this I like the opening scene of this. It's kind of mysterious a little bit with, like, because they show like the end result of the boat. You know what I mean?
Right,
you don't know what what's going on. You're like, what's, you know, you see the feet running through and there's, you know, fire or whatever. What I didn't notice, this is one of the pieces we talked about. What are things that you know that maybe it's Kevin Spacey at the end? You know, so he's, you see Keaton half dead. You know, he's about to get killed, whatever. But did you notice that Kaiser Soze, like, pissed on the wick that he lit? You see him on the top of the boat,
peeing.
Put it out so it wouldn't blow it up, you know. But then when they show him again, like, he had the gold watch and the gold. So as soon as, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I'm going to. At the end, when Spacey leaves the police station and he's getting his belongings, and he's like, one gold watch, one gold lighter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what you see at the beginning. I mean, at that point, you're about to figure it out in like 5 seconds, so it's too late.
Yeah, but I think with this movie, it's almost like Memento, like, usually we try not to skip to the end first, but like this one, like, the story's told out of order.
Right.
It's told from like an unreliable narrator's viewpoint, so like you can't tell what exactly is true, what's not. Like, it skips around. So like, what did I say? In media res is the term, I think, where like you get started right in the action, like things have already happened, and then we're skipping around. So yeah, I wouldn't feel bad about jumping to the end or the reveal or anything like that, because like the whole movie is kind of going in the past. It's going to current time. It's going farther in the past. It's going more recent. Like, it's kind of bouncing around. So
yeah,
I think it's okay that we did.
Yeah.
Okay, two things. One, Terrence dropping a Latin blast. Come on, man. Terrence dropping in media res in the middle of things. Come on, bro. That's coming correct.
I got to use my English. Does that count? My English degree?
Marty, maybe he's a writer. He's going to come up with these words that we don't know. I just let it pass. I'm like, you know what?
Mark just ignores me by this point.
You've got to let art just wash over you. Anyway, did you notice, and I don't know what it means, the guy in the beginning of the movie who shoots Keaton transfers the gun into his left hand, turns it Quentin Tarantino style, and then ends Keaton. Isn't that Kevin Spacey's bad hand?
Yeah. Well, they do a lot to obscure who it really is.
You can't tell.
One thing I read is that 5 different actors actually portray Kaiser Soze in this movie, like, when you see him, like, just a shadowy figure, or you see just the hand. Like, one time it was Bryan Singer, the director, like, just as a stand-in for it. One time it was Spacey. They used Gabriel Byrne. They used some other guy. Like, when you actually see him, like, the whole scene where he murders his family and he's walking away, you actually see the long hair and that guy walking away. That's supposedly Kaiser Soze. Doesn't look anything like Spacey. That's a different guy. So, yeah, they did a lot to make sure, like, you couldn't piece it together too early, which I thought was fun.
Yeah, I thought that the little, I don't know if it's a MacGuffin is the word or whatever, but like the lighter, they keep showing, like, you see the lighter on that scene when he kills Keaton, and then Spacey fumbles around with the lighter the whole movie.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? So like, if you put it together at the end, it's another one of those like,
Chaz Palminteri has to light his cigarette for him.
Oh yeah.
Because he can't get the lighter open.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when he's walking down the street, he just does it with his bad hand.
Yeah.
You know, quick as you like, just lights a cigarette.
Well, it shows you what a great actor Spacey is, but also like just the character of Verbal Kint that he plays. Like, he's just such a pathetic cripple fumbling around. Like, he's scared. He's jittery. He, like, that guy could never be like this mythical crime figure that everyone is like thinks is the devil himself. Like, so they do a great job obscuring that.
This movie did a really good job, I think, of introducing all the characters right away. Like, so they bring them all into the police station, you know, they're in their kind of their element or whatever. Honestly, the interrogations at the beginning were like of the funniest, you know what I mean? Like, this is where I love Del Toro in there. You know, it's like, oh, he'll flip you.
Flip you for real.
What the hell's he talking about?
Yeah.
The director's like, I'll leave it in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's what put that in the movie.
That's what Terrence was saying, right? Like, he just kind of say, oh, well, what I say doesn't matter in this movie. Doesn't move the plot forward. So I'm just going to be an idiot and everyone's going to love it. And it worked because everybody loved it. I love the scenes too. If you notice, like, because 95, like, there's computers, but there's not computers. So all the stacks of files that people have on their desk. And we talked about this in a previous movie too, where I think it was Speed, where it's like suddenly like, oh, go in the basement and get the file on this guy.
Go to the archives.
Yeah, the archives. Like, what? Like, I hope that's labeled good because that's going to take you forever.
And you know what? That's like, we talked about Chaz Palminteri like being a good fit. Like, I picture him as the cop in the era where there's stacks of files on his desk. Like,
I don't
want him as a cop now, like, logging onto the database and running forensics through the electronic thing. Like,
he's old school.
Yeah, he's old school. I want him smoking a cigarette. I want him wearing a hat. Like, this is where it's at.
Nice, nice. But then they get into, so they break out of there. They get out of there. And one of my favorite scenes is the New York Finest scene.
Oh, dude.
Love it, right?
Love that.
So I thought that the precision that they did in this, it just shows how good of a crew they can be, you know? So then you're like, okay, these guys are serious. They're pretty good. I didn't get how, like, I still didn't get the whole thing. I was trying to figure out why Kevin Spacey was even there. You know, like, he's a con man, I think is what they sell him as, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you got these guys that small kill time. People and crooks, and he's a small time and he's in there. Again, that's another little potential, like, why is he with these guys? Like, it didn't make any sense.
You never want a new guy in the group. Like, you get in the group together to pull off a bank job or whatever. Like, you need trust. And, like, other than Keaton, I think he didn't know anybody before, right? Like, Keaton got him in with the group. So, like, they were kind of distrusting of him in the first place. So, yeah, that just kind of enforces that rule. Like, Mark, if we ever go on a crime spree, like, we're not inviting the new guy you've never met before, I've never met.
Like, Pete's okay.
Yeah.
We're not one of Pete's friends.
I mean, me and Pete have done a bunch of jobs together. Well,
yeah.
It's interesting that in the very beginning of the movie, Kevin Spacey is doing the talk over of the scene. He's doing the narration of the scene. And he says, quite literally, I think the quote is, it didn't make any sense that I was there.
Yeah.
And there's a close-up of Kevin Spacey's face.
Yeah.
And that is a straight up lie because he's the guy that put everybody.
Yeah. He orchestrated the whole thing.
So they're playing sleight of hand with you from the opening, from the jump.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense that I was there. No, it makes perfect sense.
And in a movie like this, when you hear that line, it didn't make any sense I was there. The first thing you as an audience member should be thinking is, okay, well, why are you there? There's a reason. They don't write movie scripts and just have no reason for a character to exist or a character to be in a certain place. And, like, the alarm bells probably should have been going off in our heads. But I know the first time I watched this movie, like, it just nailed me at the end. Like, I didn't figure it out the whole way. And then once you do, it's like, oh, my God, you feel like Kuyan. Like, I'm such an idiot. How could I have not been onto all the clues?
One of the clues that you would have to have some sort of second-level knowledge to get that I had to look up. Kaiser Sose is supposed to be Turkish, yes?
Hungarian, yeah.
In some sort of form or fashion. The word soze in Hungarian means talks too much.
Yeah.
And Verbal Kint says, they call me Verbal because, and he looks at the camera and he smiles. Sometimes I talk too much.
Yeah.
And then once again, the director is playing the rope-a-dope with the audience. Now you see me, now you don't, kind of thing.
And Kint sounds almost like king, like Kaiser, like you think Kaiser is like...
Absolutely,
off man. Of czar, the German, whatever, like the leader, whatever. So yeah, all the clues were right there for us. I wonder if they released this movie in Hungary, like if they had to change everything up, because everybody would be like, okay, yeah, it's him. Like,
he's Kaiser
Cunningham.
It
wouldn't have been a fun experience for them. Yeah.
The one thing I liked too, and I skipped past it too, was when they're in the police lineup.
Like, oh yeah, that's iconic scene.
Total iconic scene. I guess, Del Toro kept, like, farting in that lineup.
That's what I read,
which is why they were laughing the whole time.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a very serious, grave scene, and he just kept doing it. So that kept them all laughing through the whole thing, and they couldn't get a serious take.
I love that scene a lot. Like, I actually replayed that. Like, I rewound it and watched the gangs. I just love them. They're like, give me the keys, you cocksucker motherfucker!
Yeah, Stephen Baldwin going nuts. That's awesome. Great.
It's so good.
The scene right after that is one of my favorites, because it sets the tone for who these men are. The scene, they're all in a room and they are finding out that Keaton, who's obviously a very famous within that circle, is trying to go straight, and they are down on him because these guys are hardened criminals, and if you're not a criminal, you're nothing, you are lesser than. And that sets the scene that these guys don't care, man. These guys, the law does not apply to them. They're robbers and killers. And I thought that one scene really solidified these guys as a group. The fact that Keaton is like, I don't want to know anything about this. But Kaiser Sose, Verbal Kent, needs him in there, which is why he goes to his apartment later.
Yeah, and that's another trope we see sometimes with like crime movies or thrillers, like the whole one more job thing. It's like, oh, I'm finally getting out. I'm going straight. I'm doing one more job. One more job never ends well.
No.
Like, you should have gotten out during the last job, because if you're doing this one more, they're making a movie about it, like, you're in trouble.
Yeah, for sure. But I love when they go see, like, Redfoot. I mentioned I like this guy as a character. Like, good spot. Like, he's just the suave gangster type guy out there. You know, he's got connections everywhere, so it's kind of cool there. But, yeah, they do a couple jobs with him. The scene where, I forget the guy's name, but they were in the parking garage.
Yeah.
And then Mick McManus with the two guns, you know, and he's lining it up. And then, like, unnecessarily, like, let me just cross my hands and shoot. Like, it was awesome, though. It was really awesome. Kills the dudes off the van or whatever, but
Kent is the, like, shoots the last guy, like, kind of that's
oh
a
yeah
too,
because what's his name,
how
won't
cold-blooded he can be. It's like, oh, this guy was like meek and,
but with,
like,
his right
he's
hand,
the one
by
pulling
the
trigger
with his right hand he did it too, so, you know, because his left hand was glued, he couldn't you know. There was the scene when they meet Redfoot back, when they say it was supposed to be money and ended up being like the dope or whatever, and he flicks the cigarette at him. So it wasn't supposed to go in Baldwin's
eye. Hits him in the eye. Yeah, when I watched, I forgot about that scene. I was like, oh my God, it hit him right in the eye. And then reading about it after, it's like, oh yeah, that was an accident and they kept it in.
Yeah, Baldwin's like, no, I took it. Like, you put that in there. Like, that was good. Like, he's legitimately got mad at that. So it was good reaction time. So, but then I like the pool room scene when Kobayashi finds him. I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit here, but, you know, they're in the pool room and he shows up with all their files and he's like, that's when they realize.
He's got everything on him. Right. Everything about their entire lives and like, oh my God.
Everyone he did time with, everyone he did jobs with. Yeah. You know. It just shows the reach of Sose at that point.
Yeah. And Kobayashi, he's so great because he's like, you need a character like that in these movies where like, he knows everything. You're wondering, like, is he Kaiser Sose? Like, for a long stretch of the movie, like, he's kind of the prime suspect because he knows everything. He's the one that's kind of the front man for this whole thing. If someone pulls a gun on him, he doesn't freak out. He keeps his cool. He's got, like, nerves of steel. Like, he can talk his way out of anything. So he just did a great job of, like, this guy could be the leader of this whole thing. Like, he could be this calculating, ruthless guy that's putting it all together. And, I mean, they think he is. They are ready to shoot him, but he talks his way out of that, too. So he gets out of it. What was he? Keaton has the DA or whatever that he's he's with, so
the
he
lawyer,
threatens
the
her.
High profile lawyer.
Yeah, she's upstairs, and so he proves it to him, and kind of keeps his life through that.
Yeah, they paint the director does a good job of making him out to be like, you're not sure who Kaiser Soze could be.
Yeah,
right, between Kuyan, thank you. Between him painting that's Keaton and you think it's Kobayashi, like, you're not really sure who's who. You know, you find out that it's Kevin Pollak that took the truck of guns at the beginning. You know what I mean?
So awesome.
So it's so cool.
He goes
Come
on, man. It was me.
Yep.
I'm a criminal.
So you just, at that point, you just don't know who's who and what's going on. And that's what you want. You want to be, as an audience, like, you want to be confused and you want to think you know. But you don't know.
No.
You know? So I love everything about the Kevin Spacey scene when he's sitting in the police office, right? And we'll probably get into that more detail in a minute, right? When he's telling, I like when he tells the Kaiser Soze story. So you're saying the guy with the long hair when he goes in and kills his family or whatever.
Yeah.
I like, that's a cool scene too. Just, you know, because it's that myth. It's like, oh, here's, like, tell me about Kaiser Soze. Like Kuyan didn't know who he was all of a sudden. And he's like, tell me the story. But he's just telling the audience, you know.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, is Kevin Spacey, what, number two to Morgan Freeman for narrating shows? You know what I mean? Like he does pretty good, right? So, I don't know. I like it. But I think then you figure out in that scene where, you know, Spacey starts telling Kuyan everything he wants to hear. Like, he already knows he thinks it's Keaton. So now
he's got him on the hook at
totally,
that point. Yeah.
Totally on the hook. The boat heist scene, when it gets to the end of that there, I was a little disappointed in that scene. I feel like all the other jobs they did up to that point, they were pretty, like, precision is why, like, everything was awesome. And I feel like the boat heist scene, they just kind of forced it. And I don't know if it was them as characters forcing it or was it like the writing was forced. There was just,
It was just bigger. It was a bigger scale. What was it? 27? Well, I guess they were some of them, the 27 people found dead on the boat. But, like,
yeah.
The other one, like, they just boxed in the police car and, like, they just had to take down two guys. And, like, it was easy.
But that's the types of criminal they are. Like, yeah. They, you know, they do these little smash and grab jobs.
But right, if, you know, if they say there's $91 million available to you and you do it or you die because I know everything about your entire life, like, you're going to do it.
But they're smarter than that, right? Because now you're down a guy. Fenster's been killed.
Yeah.
You know, Keaton already knows he's not letting Verbal get on the boat, right? So now you got essentially two guys on the boat, right? I mean, McManus is awesome. I mean, he's clearing that room like he's an FBI agent. Yeah. You know?
I like but, to see where he's just kind of poking his head out, shoot a guy, poke his head back, poke his head out, shoot another guy.
Right. Like I thought
playing
that
whack-a-mole.
Yeah, like that scene with him was cool. But I don't know. I just feel like, because where was the plan for Kevin Pollak in this? I mean, obviously he was dead before that happened, but was it like, hey, you check this half the boat, I'll check this half, and you do the middle? Like, there just wasn't – I just didn't like how that came together.
There's a little suspension of disbelief that gets stretched in the fact that three guys could search that boat.
Right.
Yeah.
For 91 kilograms. If $100 is if $100 goes into 91 million – 91,000 times, that's 91 kilograms. That wouldn't fill this room. To find that on that boat, you know, is going to be tough. And so when the guy goes, there's no coke, there's no coke, I'm like, well, where do you get that? How long have you been looking? You've been killing people.
Yeah.
You've been running around. People are shooting. You check the cupboards, bro. Yeah. Like, what's your
stock just going to be out on the table somewhere?
What's
for
this,
you?
Are they going to have a sign? But, you know, that's just me. But the fact that when they get on the boat, right? When they get on the boat, they find out that it's all gone to hell. And what's his name? McManus winds up with a knife in his back. Yeah. He doesn't even get shot.
Right.
That I find that what's his name? Hockney gets shot when he finds the money.
Yeah, in the van.
And did you notice the little trick of movie making they did there? Kevin Pollak turns around because he gets shot, and you see his stomach explode a little bit with blood. So he's a dead man. He turns around to see who shot him, and the whole screen goes slowly white. As if he is suddenly enlightened to who Kaiser Sose is.
Yes.
Mm, okay.
You know, he and the look on his face is like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, his eyes go wide, yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe the McManus death, you know, with the knife in the back. Because he's over here, like I said, he's G.I. Joe through this whole thing, right, doing his thing. If it was, say, Spacey that stabbed him, and we don't know if it was or not, like, he would overpower him. Like, even if he had a knife in the back, then he still walks in the room. Oh, hey, Keaton.
I don't know if it's in his spinal cord or whatever. But.
Yeah, but he walks another 10 feet into this room where Keaton was. And he's like, oh, hey. And then just falls. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't turn and be like, not hey, like, it's Verbal.
Yeah.
or something like that. You know what I
right,
mean? Like,
right. By the way.
I don't know. It's convenient. It was very convenient.
It is convenient. Yeah. But you know what? I was thinking about it after, because when it's done, you can think about these things of, like, were there inconsistencies or you need to suspend your disbelief. And you got to remember, everything you see is what Verbal Kent is telling you.
Yes.
This did not all just happen this way. Because I think right after Hockney gets killed, you immediately see Verbal back where he was, like where Keaton left him. So it's like, did he just go there and jet back immediately? Like, so it's purposefully leading you down the wrong path.
I agree with you 100%. I don't know as an audience member if you're going to pick that up.
Well, yeah, you don't. I mean, it takes multiple viewings. We've all seen it a bunch by now.
But if you go backwards at it and you say, everything I'm watching is a lie.
Yeah, you have to. Because Verbal could not have been everywhere. He couldn't have been in the place to kill each of these guys.
He
and then also
killed
back
Keaton
where Keaton left him.
And watched himself kill Keaton.
Yeah, he was up
that.
On the second level there. Right. Yeah. So you have to just understand, okay, this not only unreliable narrator, he like that he doesn't remember what he's saying. Like, he is purposefully misleading you.
Right.
And, like, he's telling this story to Kuyan. Everything you're seeing is what he's telling to Kuyan. Right. And he's purposefully leading him down the wrong path, leading him to believe something he wants him to believe. So, yeah, it's tough. Like, how did it actually happen? Like, we don't know. All these guys are dead.
Right.
This these things more or less happened on the boat, but the finer details, like, Redfoot is not Redfoot. Redfoot's
a name on
the corkboard of this
thing, man.
Big ladies. Yeah, it's
that's why this movie is so great. Is because you watch this movie, you walk out of the theater. I didn't see it in the theater. I think we rented it from a place called Blockbuster, which I'll explain to you guys later.
Oh,
not that young. Did you say he'll explain it to us?
I'll give it. I'm a little older than you guys.
Thanks, Dad.
It was very cool. In its day, it was very cool. And you got to sit down over a big giant plate of nachos and talk about what just happened.
Because you guys do what we're doing now.
Because the answer is, everything is a lie.
Yeah.
Everything's a lie.
First off, I wouldn't be talking much because I'd be jamming a whole plate.
Yeah,
of
where's the nachos, Mark? So like, kind of host you here.
Well, you know, I'm too busy talking. You know, if it was nachos, you wouldn't hear me because I'd just be crunching. With the way you said that, Terrence, was like, I know the whole story is like when he's in the room with Kuyan, like, it's exactly right. But I never looked at it the way you just said it, where it's like what we're seeing is him telling that story. Right. And again, it's the director tricking the audience.
Yeah, there's a lot of trickery going.
Yeah. And it serves its purpose because it works. But
yeah, this is a good one to think about and chew over. And like so many, like Marty, you've said things that I just watched this movie for the sixth time or whatever it is. I've been doing research on this movie, knowing that we're going to be doing a podcast about it. And still, you're saying things that I hadn't even considered.
Right.
Like there's so many layers and so many angles you can come at this from.
That's why. Well, did you catch this one? This is one of my favorite. This is my favorite quote in the whole movie. I don't know if we're up to that part, but this is my favorite quote from the whole movie, of a movie with great quotes in it. They're in. Verbal Kint is gone. He's getting processed, and Kuyan says to the guy, I forget his name, whose office he's borrowing, he says, "This place is a mess," and the guy says, "Yeah, but it's system. You just got to take a step back and look at it."
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. And then exactly. This is not when I saw it at first. When I saw it at third, I'm like, oh, dude, there's the movie right there. There it is.
Yeah.
If you take one step back or two, you might get a handle on it. You're never going to get a whole handle on this movie. Then that's what makes it so great.
Well, let's get into that for a minute, right? So that's the next thing I was going to ask you. Like, what are the ways that now that we've rewatched this?
Yeah.
What are the ways that you knew it was Spacey?
I didn't. When I first saw it, I was like,
"No, no." I mean,
what?
Like, no. Now that you rewatch it again, like, if you watched it yesterday, and you're like, "Oh yeah, I know it's Spacey because of this." And you just said that's one way right there. Like, it just that's how you knew going into it. Like, you look at the room, and he's like, "Oh, okay, yeah." You just step back and look at it, which is exactly what Spacey did. You know, and you actually see, and he wasn't in that scene when he said it, but there's actually a scene in there where, when Spacey first sits down, if you watch his eyes, like, he's doing this. Like, he's...
Oh, see, I didn't even catch that.
Like, he's
getting all that info.
He's looking around as the two... Because the two police guys were talking to each other. So he wasn't looking at Kuyan at the time. Mm. You see him at the wall, and he's just doing his thing. And then he's like, oh, when I was in Skokie, Illinois. You know, and that's when you're like, what? You know?
So he's got a bunch, like, when you watch it back, it's like, why the hell would he say these things? Like, I was picking beans in Guatemala. It's like, these are such random asides, like, in this story of, like, trying to tell you everything that happened. Like, he throws it, and you don't really think anything of it at the time, but, like, afterwards, it's like, oh, my God, yeah, he was just giving you the breadcrumbs. He didn't even have to say that kind of stuff.
No.
Like, he's toying with him.
He's
a mastermind, He's enjoying it.
So I mentioned the lighter at the beginning. I feel like the lighter was something that, like, throughout the movie, we couldn't do the lighter. So there's, like, you couldn't put the pieces together right away. So you don't know it's Spacey, but something with the lighter.
That's something,
You know, there was, when they did the police lineups, like, the lineup scene, they never showed Spacey being interrogated. They did everybody else, but they never did Spacey in there. Like, so he's talking to Keaton and McManus, right, and all these things. But they never had, like, a verbal interrogation.
And then the rest of the movie is him kind of just in the office.
So I was just like, how come they didn't, like, interview him even for a minute? Yeah. Like, maybe he's not as funny, you know, I don't know. Maybe they filmed something and didn't put it in the movie, I don't know.
You got the whole KS, Kaiser Soze, Kevin Spacey. I couldn't find
it. Dude!
You just...
Mind blown!
I don't know if the character was named before they cast Spacey or what. I did read that Spacey he watched whatever the first movie that Bryan Singer and Christopher McQuarrie, we haven't even mentioned his name. He's the writer of the movie who...
Won
Best Original Screenplay, deservedly so.
It wasn't written. It was written for Spacey, but not for the initials. So
okay, I was wondering.
There was a guy that the writer worked with, that his name was similar to Kaiser Soze.
Oh, that's right. You know,
the characters in here were based off of people he knew.
Yeah, like he worked at like a law firm or something, and he named a few of them after.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so KS, like, it seems like it might just be a coincidence probably, but you could have maybe linked that thing. What's the odds on that?
It's a theory, right?
Kaiser Sose, like, it's what, six letters and then four letters? Verbal Kint, six and then four. You talked about the Hungarian translation part of it. Like, there's a lot of different breadcrumbs there if you really look.
But you got to look.
You got to
like,
look, yeah.
Like, this movie never hands you anything.
No.
You guys watch this with, like, your decoder ring?
You got it, yeah. Yeah. I love this.
I didn't have a decoder ring, but I had Google up. You know, figuring out what does Sose actually mean?
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Oh, yeah, like it was after the fact that I happened upon that fact, and I was like, oh, my God, really?
Well, Kaiser,
brush up on my Hungarian, I guess.
Kaiser is not synonymous, but it's homonymous? I don't know. But it's with the emperor. So it means sort of emperor in, you know, certain languages.
Yeah, like the leader, the ruler, whatever. Yeah.
The other thing I didn't know was, like, why did they kill Fenster? Like, I didn't – next thing I know, he's just dead in a cave on a beach somewhere.
That's a great question.
I didn't catch why was he alone, first off, because he was with McManus all the time. And next thing I know, he's dead. And I'm like, what? Why did they kill him? Like, he would have been an asset on the boat job. You know, if he's part of that boat heist,
yeah,
it's a little more believable for me because he's another guy clearing the rooms.
We'll skip ahead a little bit, I guess. I put that as my least favorite scene just because we all love Fenster as a character, like how unique Del Toro is with it.
Yep.
And it's very unsatisfying to just be like, oh, they found his dead body there. You didn't get to see him die. You didn't put up a fight. You don't know anything else about it. Like all the other ones when they die, like it's in the action. They're on the boat. Things are happening. Like Fenster's just like, here's his bloody body on the beach, and, like, you go from there. So, yeah, kind of leaves you wanting more.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And then the question before the court is, like, what precipitated his death? I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't either,
like,
yeah.
Why did he have to go?
That's
why
what
is
I mean.
He the price?
Yeah.
His name is Verbal, and Fenster is verbally challenged, so maybe he just couldn't take
I'm going to kill that dude first. I'm going to kill that dude first and early.
Can't understand a word he said.
Here's a question I have. And, you know, there's a scene where they have to bury him and it's a whole thing. If that scene never happens, they find him and they walk away. They don't have to go through this whole rigmarole of burying him with their bare hands. Does the movie lose or gain anything? I didn't get why that was even in there.
Yeah. And, like, they felt so compelled and close to him, like, oh, we got to bury him. We can't leave him here. Like, some of it seemed like self-preservation, like, oh, we don't want the body to be found. And then... But yeah, that one was a little out of place. I don't know. I didn't love that scene.
It was just the scene, I think, to show how McManus loved him as a brother.
Yeah.
You know, how close they were. Because you know that they did jobs together from one of the opening scenes, but this was just more of like, we got to give him the respect of burying him. I think that was, you see a little character arc on Stephen Baldwin. You don't see much of those. That's the one you get. So there you go. How come Verbal got a deal after the boat heist, right? Now he's got immunity from whoever. Why?
I think because Kuyan believes Keaton's still alive. And
this
that
is before Kuyan even came into it. So Kuyan pulls him
true.
In.
He
so
didn't like, give him the deal.
They find him on the boat docks, and he's just, you know, apparently cowering in a corner as a, you know, as a cripple or whatever. But, like, how come he had total immunity? Like,
yeah, because Kuyan walks in, and they're saying, I don't know why you want to talk to this guy. The governor called. We've had visits from the chief of police, and this morning the governor called. This guy's protected.
Yeah, he was getting out in 2 hours.
High. And why is he protected? I think because he's probably got dirt on anybody he wants to get dirt on. If Kaiser Sose would be the kind of man who would protect himself at the highest levels to make sure that when he takes his revenge on these guys, these five guys that stole from him or wronged him in some form or fashion, and use them to hit the one dude that could finger him.
Yeah.
That's why they went on the boat.
Yeah, for the
rat. To kill the dude.
The Argentinian smuggler or whatever, yeah.
Right. That dude's a dead man. Like, from the opening, like, from the minute you see him, you're like, oh, that dude's dead. so he uses those five guys.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, how come he got the deal? Like, what did he offer? So he gets arrested at the docks or whatever, and then, like, what's he giving up? Like, oh, yeah, we went to steal coke off a boat. Like,
Yeah, it's a good question.
You,
I don't know.
You're going to rat on guys that are already dead.
Like, yeah, what's the governor got to do with it? How does he get
That's what I mean. Like, he clearly had something on those guys. Like, that had nothing to do with the boat heist.
Right.
It was like, I'm here, but, oh, let me go or else this. So, I don't know. It just, it didn't mesh for me.
Like, I couldn't tell you.
It was kind of forced.
From Verbal's perspective, I get sticking around and staying and being that scared, terrified, crippled guy because, like, you keep up your cover. And, like, if you just escaped, it's like, oh, this guy was behind the whole thing.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
So, I understand that. But, yeah, I don't know why he got a deal, to be honest.
I don't know either. And the other question is, like, so when Verbal walks out of the police station, if you notice, like, there's so much action outside. Like, it's a police station. It had this, like, food trucks and stuff
out
there.
It's a bustling place.
Yeah. Right. It was like he comes out and gets lost in a crowd or whatever. Like, the hell's going on outside of a police station on, like, a Tuesday? you know what I mean? Like, what's happening? You know?
It's downtown, right? It's a busy city.
Maybe.
But yeah, there's a lot of bodies crisscrossing.
Yeah.
Kuyang goes looking for him across the street. He loses him. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's just.
That's movie making, baby.
It's totally movie making.
Well, speaking of movie making, I think the one thing that impacted me, because I can't lay claim to knowing or following any breadcrumbs when I first saw this.
Yeah.
But when that
guy tells you they can is lying.
When Kevin Spacey's foot straightens out and you go, what
best,
now?
Best moment of the movie.
What?
Yeah.
And he gets in, I think it's a Jag. It's
with Kobayashi.
Yeah, some hot looking car. Beautiful sedan and drives away clean.
Yep.
And you're like, that dude was Kaiser Sose the whole time.
Yeah.
That's that bit of movie making is iconic.
And you know what? Earlier in the movie, they show a close up of Verbal's feet limping. Like,
yeah,
it's that exact same shot. And like, you don't even think about it. But so when you see it that second time, you're like, oh, they're just doing this again. And then as it slowly straightens out and he's walking confidently, it's like, holy crap. That's when the bomb hits.
Yeah.
Like, that's so well done.
Yep. So that poses the question then, is this the best movie ending ever for you? Like, of all the movies you've seen?
You're specifically going, like, twist ending, I'm assuming? Or just anything?
Just in general.
No.
No?
I think that it's up there. It's worth talking about.
Yeah.
It's worth dissecting. It's up there. But I think Sixth Sense made me go, oh, come on now.
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
That was before we had any knowledge about Shyamalan
also,
and the twist.
Fight Club is another one,
okay,
but it gets explained kind of in the third of the movie. It gets explained, I'm you. I'm a figment of you. Brad Pitt is explaining to Edward Norton, I am a figment of your imagination. You're doing it all. And then you're going like, wait a minute, what now? But I would say best ending of a movie, this is up there. It's in the conversation.
We'll have to keep a running list then.
It's tough, yeah. Because for me, like, I got to compare it to other twist endings. Like the ending of Shawshank is incredible. But like, how do you compare that to this? Like, it's so totally different. Like, for this, I try to think of other ones like Sixth Sense where it's like, oh my God, they got me the whole time. And like, this might be the top as far as those goes. I don't know.
It's up there.
Yeah.
It's up there. I don't know. Like, you just mentioned two that I wasn't even thinking about. So I'm going to have to rethink my question. We'll circle back in Usual Suspects 2. We'll figure it out.
Well, if you take a look at The Sixth Sense, The Sixth Sense is different than Usual Suspects in one material aspect, and that is The Sixth Sense is not a lie. He's a ghost.
Right.
But they just never tell you he's a ghost, except when that kid says, I see dead people, and the camera is on.
Oh,
Bruce
yeah.
Willis.
It's another one you can look back at the breadcrumbs.
So they're like, they gave it to you without really giving it to you, whereas Usual Suspects, no. You're just watching Verbal Kintz unreeling this, you know, reeling this story out for Kuyan, and then at the end you find out he's been making it up. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other, but both of those movies have incredible twist. I love a good twist ending, especially because I am not good upon first watching of like, oh, that's really
sussing
a bad guy. That I you know, I'm just not that. I just watch it like it's a documentary.
You know what's so good too with this? Like, yes, Verbal's lying the whole time, but we're not thinking about that while we're watching the movie.
No.
You're just kind of along for the ride, and you're like, okay, this is what happened. He's laying it out. He's taking us through the whole thing. And then afterwards, we're like, oh, he's lying the whole time. Now it makes you question everything.
Right.
Like you said, Sixth Sense it's all just there, and it is as it happened, but you could have seen it, like, once you look back and you get the reveal. But this one, like, when you're first watching it, you're never thinking, like, oh, he's not telling the truth. Like, he's pathetic, this guy. He's just giving his stories, and we're just buying it.
Hook, right, he's waiting for his bail to post.
Yeah.
There's a collection of movies, I can't name them for you, but they're kind of in my head, that they're two movies. They're the movie you watched, and then they're the movie you watched the second time once you know the trick.
Yeah.
Sixth Sense is one. Fight Club is one. A movie called No Way Out with Kevin Costner is one. And this is one. When you know he's Kaiser Soze, you're watching that movie through a different lens. Yeah. I mean, I know I am.
No, I think that what happens is when Spacey's given his – when he's – the whole time he's in the police station, he's essentially misleading – Kuyan,
yeah,
but he's misleading the audience as well.
Yes, you know, without
because
question.
That's where they're showing it. So that's where the trickery comes in, which makes it so good. Because like we're fooled just as much as like we're this character. We're thinking what Kuyan's thinking. We're like, well, it's got to be Keaton. He's making a good argument that it's Keaton. Here's why. Right. He's dead. Yeah. He's not dead. He's this and this. You know, he's telling his stories, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, so good stuff.
He did. Kevin Spacey just like breaks down. He says, yes, it was Keaton the whole time.
Plays it to
I was buying that. I was buying that.
And, well, we're just like Kuyan. Like he's like, I'm smarter than you. I'm going to get what I want in the end. You're going to tell me. And exactly we're like, yeah, we're going to find out the story. We're here and we're going to find out what happened. And just like Kuyan, like we're just being led down the primrose path.
He forces it out of him. He calls him weak and stupid.
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, it was Keaton. You got me. You know, like played right into his hands every time. So, all right. So who do you think about for this movie? When you think of Kevin Spacey, is this the first movie that comes to mind?
Oh, no.
No?
He's just his body of work.
What do you go with? It's tough for him. He's
getting so many things. To be perfectly candid, my favorite movie that he's ever done is called Margin Call.
Oh, that's a great one, too.
And
another great cast.
Love Margin Call. I didn't love American Beauty, but he won the Oscar for that one, too. I don't put too much stock in Oscars and this and that, but no, this is just one of the many.
Okay, so not a peak role for him.
One of the many home runs that guy's hit.
What about, Gabriel Byrne, I think we all agree, like, this is the only thing you know he's in.
Yeah.
Right? What about Chaz?
Got to go Bronx Tale, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, he wrote it. That's his thing. Like, that's been an enduring. And, that's another one that's like that, like, Italian kind of, he's in his persona there. Like, and he's much more of the star. This one, he ends up being the fool, like, mostly his roles, like he's a smart guy, he's a tough guy, like he doesn't end up with egg on his face. So yeah, I mean, I think of this movie for him, but it's not top of the list.
I don't think he does as well in this movie if it's not for Bronx Tale. So Bronx Tale came out a couple of years prior. So yeah.
Huh.
What about Del Toro? Is this what you think about Marty when you see Benicio?
He's just so compelling.
Yeah.
Anytime he opens his mouth, he steals the scene.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would say this is the one that, if you talk to me about Benicio Del Toro, I'm like, oh yeah, he flip you.
What are you saying?
I say, he'll flip you.
He'll what?
Flip you. Flip you for real.
Yeah.
Flip you. Yeah.
You're trying to treat me like a criminal.
Nothing.
You are a criminal.
You can't speak you say stuff that doesn't mean anything. Guy's great.
Yeah.
Love it.
I think we agree. Stephen Baldwin doesn't really have much other body of work.
Number one.
No, this was his Mount Everest, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Kevin Pollak, not for me. I still think Few Good Men, but
yeah, I'd agree.
I'll tell you what. I will stand as the outsider and say that he had a bigger part, I think, in Few Good Men, but I found him to be more compelling.
Yeah, he's not as important.
Just the guy with the, not the I'm ready for a fight attitude, but just his attitude and his complete embodiment of I'm a criminal. It's what I do kind of thing. Yeah. There's a scene with Kevin Pollak where the cops come and get him. It's in the very beginning.
In the garage, right?
Yeah. He reaches under the car. He doesn't get shot?
Well, they all run up to him with the guns.
If you reach... If you reach under the vehicle for something that they don't know about, I don't know. I'm not reaching for nothing. And he pulls out a rag or whatever. But
good scene.
I loved him in this. I thought he was and a great choice.
Yeah. And anytime you got one of these heist movies, there's always an explosives guy That's always an interesting character. He's always a little unhinged. He's always a little crazy. Yeah. So, yeah, I like him for this. I think I like him more in this than anything else. But, yeah, he's a little more prominent maybe in A Few Good Men, even if it's not as important a role as a lot of other guys have in that movie. So, yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know. I think I'm being talked into this one for him.
Well, all right. Fantastic. What about your favorite scene in this movie? What did you like best? If you had to pick one, you only get one.
Yeah, because I always just step on everybody's toes and take all of them. I end up with eight lines. It's got to be when the limp straightens out, when you get the reveal of Kaiser Sose, who he is. It's verbal the whole time. He's walking down the street, and it's just so good. They focus on the shoes, and he's walking, and he's dragging that foot, and then it just straightens out. It's just walking confidently to freedom. Like, he did it. He pulled it off.
Okay.
My favorite scene is as I said, the one that's right after the lineup. When these guys are in a room together, they're pissed. They know they know that this is some trumped up thing.
Yeah.
But you get an idea of what hardened criminals these dudes are, and you get an idea of who's who in the zoo, and how if you're trying to go straight, you know, what's he say? Keaton going straight? Say it isn't so. Something like that. I forget what it is, but you get an idea, and I think that sets the tone for these guys for the whole movie.
I like the New York's Finest heist scene with the cab. Just that whole, just the way they pulled it off was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't see it coming as an audience. You're the camera's in the car of the cops and the one dude talking, and all of a sudden it's like, what's this guy? And these four vans pull up, whatever. It was pretty dope.
Great scene.
I like that scene.
This is such a small detail, but I love how they've all got the pantyhose on their head to obscure their identity.
Yeah.
Spacey Verbal is smoking a cigarette through that song. That cracked me up when I watched it, even though I've seen it.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, well, that's what you got to do, I guess. What about quotes? This has a handful of quotes, I'm sure. So, Marty, give me two. Give me two you like.
I wrote down, you just got to step back and look at the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's the scene there. And in the very beginning, when he's doing the talk over, it didn't make sense that I was there, because that's the first lie that they tell the audience. Of course it makes sense. You're there. You're the guy. And when we will find out later, those are my best two.
Okay.
In a movie, that's tough to pick a good quote. Tough to pick a bad quote, excuse me.
Okay. What about you? What do you got?
I'll control myself now, Mark. I promise. I'll just do two.
If you have
more
than two, it's fine. But let's see what two
you
got.
I'll just do two. We haven't mentioned it yet, but this is one of the great lines in any movie, is the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Yep.
And that comes up twice, early on and then again towards the end of his interview with Kuyan. But I just love that line. I read that apparently Macquarie and Singer claim it's from a French philosopher or something in the, I don't know, 17th century or something like that. Mm. They claim they've never heard that before. They just wrote it, which is just wild to me. That it was a quote that existed, and they pretty much just
plagiarized
word for word. Yeah. But no, I love that line. I don't know if it's really a line, but when the burnt up Hungarian dude in the hospital bed, the Kaiser Soze.
You can't understand one word that dude is saying until he says. And he means it. He's dying.
Yeah.
He is dying, and he is screaming Kaiser Soze's name.
It's so, off-putting. Oh, my God. You just kind of feel this guy's evil. It's such a weird name, too. It's not, there's some interesting names. Verbal Kint is such a strange name, but, Kaiser, it just sounds sinister. It sounds like this guy is someone to be feared. So, just the way he says it, and this guy's, got half his face burnt off, it's kind of chilling. So, yeah, love that.
I like anything with Del Toro. The opening few minutes with him when he's being interrogated by the cops, and he's like, oh, is that the one with the hooker with dysentery? what's he talking about? What is that? It makes no sense. Right. And then a few minutes later, when they go in the room, you're talking how they're all in this room, and he's talking about how he got strip searched. And he goes, oh, easy for you to say. I had a guy's finger in my asshole. And Kevin Pollak goes, oh, is it Friday already?
This is so funny. Yeah, the whole banter between all of them is great.
It was just awesome. That was, like I said, anything with Del Toro to me was the best.
Mark, can I give you one more? Because I restrained myself. I'm not gonna steal any quote that Mark might possibly say.
Cut loose. Do your thing.
Let's see if I had one more too. I was gonna save it for later.
Okay. I was gonna say Verbal, when he's in the interview, he's talking about Kaiser Soze, and it's kind of just kind of building up the myth-making of all of it. He's like, Keaton always said, I don't believe in God, but I'm afraid of him. "Well, I believe in God, and the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze." I love that line.
That's another line that sends a chill through you. Yeah, that's a good line. We talked about the scene, I think, Marty, you were saying about when Fenster was killed at the beach. Probably something they could have done without, in your opinion, right? So if I look at like a bathroom break scene, that might have been one you can go take.
It's mine, yeah.
Same here.
Beyond that, I didn't think anything else. I thought the rest of it was all story building.
Dude, this movie clips along pretty quick.
I think so,
yeah,
too.
You know what I mean? They're moving that narrative forward every scene.
Yeah. You think there's a better title for this? I know Terrence doesn't. He likes all the movie titles.
I put a couple, but they pale in comparison. For me, I put the lineup. Like, that's the iconic movie poster, like, okay, all of them, yeah, in the lineup. Oh, if you just called it Kaiser Soze, like, I don't know. But The Usual Suspects is perfect to me. Marty, you got anything?
No, I think The Usual Suspects is a perfect name because it's the first fake out. No, they're not The Usual Suspects. They have been hand picked.
Yeah.
It's the first. They put the fake out on the movie poster.
Very good point.
And, you know, so no, it's not The Usual Suspects, even though they would be. You know what I mean? These guys are criminals and they're known to the police. But no, that I couldn't think of a better movie title for that.
Yeah, same. I like where it is. The lineup's not a bad one.
Yeah, Usual Suspects. Apparently, that's a line from Casablanca. It's kind of not even one of the big lines, but throwaway line. That's where the term The Usual Suspects came from. And then now it's like kind of a regular part of the vernacular. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay. I thought probably one of the biggest missed opportunities in this era was this movie was ripe, and it still is. It's ripe for a prequel.
No doubt.
Without a doubt, right? Like, I want the backstories of all these guys.
Yeah.
You know, you probably couldn't use the same actors at this point, but there's something there. That's a missed opportunity, in my opinion, where a lot of that you could get the
prequels background. Are tough because you really got to do it right because it's difficult. Like, you know where it ends up. So, like, how do I make it interesting? Like, yeah, they all have really cool backstories potentially and, like, all, like, jobs they've pulled before and stuff. So it could be really good, but, like, they really have to nail it to get it.
Yeah.
And it would always, first of all, I am for the prequel.
Okay.
I'm for that.
Yeah, I like the idea.
That's three votes.
However,
prequel.
Okay, well. Yeah. However, you have the big job of being compared to The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't make a fantastic movie, you're going to get creamed.
Well, so this was 95, right? So now we're talking, what, 30-something years? You know, 29 years. So you get a lot more ideas coming out of a lot of more creativity coming out of people. So you could.
Do you?
Well, that's true, too. Maybe half of that, right? But as we're talking making a prequel for a movie that exists, like, yeah, these are fresh ideas. But you got to build the world of Kaiser Soze at this point, right? But you're talking like a young McManus, a young Fenster. Like this is a heist movie at its finest. This is why I love the idea of this, because I want to see thievery and, you know, shenanigans going on.
What you could do without getting
thievery and shenanigans.
Nice.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Absolutely. I give that a twirl. They each wronged Kaiser Soze in their own way. One stole a truck.
So they're going to show them.
Unwittingly, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, so everything he talks about in the pool room, you have to put those scenes at some point in this.
Yeah.
And you could do a prequel series if you want. If you want to do an episode for every person and then have it tie together. We'll say a 6-show miniseries.
I like it.
Tied together.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, we'll have to do one. We'll even bring Kuyan in.
Get
there.
Get Netflix on the phone, man.
I mean, it's something. I mean, at this point, there's enough streaming services. Somebody... All right, well, we're going to write this.
I got a meeting with them later. I'll bring it up.
Ah, I appreciate it, yeah. Thievery and shenanigans.
Yes,
right?
Green light.
Yep, that's it. All right, well, I want some associate producer credits
on this,
all right?
That's all you.
Points
all
right. on the back end, bro.
Yeah, Netflix doesn't do that.
Yeah.
As far as different castings in this show, I think Verbal Kint was written for Kevin Spacey for the most part. So I think they had him kind of flagged. So I don't know where the director or whatever writers knew him from, but he
approached them. Yeah.
Okay. But they, this role was basically written for him. Kuyan, as you said, was, you know, he had to go in and film his roles, his scenes in a couple weeks or a week or whatever.
Just a
it was.
Week, yeah.
I guess, but they looked into Pacino for this role. He turned it down cause he just played a cop in Heat. So he didn't want to play another cop right away. I mean, they looked at like Walken and De Niro, either of those guys would have crushed this.
Yeah, they're all fun to think about being in there.
Like Christopher Walken in there, just doing his, just being himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Christopher Walken wouldn't have to act. He would just behave. You know what I mean? Just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he brings something. I like the thought of De Niro, too. Like, De Niro is usually, like, the mastermind, and here he'd be the guy that you get over on in the end. So that, that would be a fun juxtaposition of what he's doing.
They're interchangeable in that role, I think. So, I mean, I love Chaz, don't get me wrong, but I think you're right. Any of those guys in there crush it just the same.
Think about what you're saying, though. You are talking about some serious heavyweights.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta have you gotta have a big bat in your hand when you step into the role of Agent Kuyan, and I think Chaz did himself real well.
Oh yeah, perfect.
I agree. And then Redfoot was the one I was talking about earlier. Like a lot of people were trying to jump in that little. It's a small role, but they consider like Pacino, Jeff Bridges, Tommy Lee Jones would have been funky in that role. I think I don't know what he was doing in '95, but James Spader I thought was a decent choice. Like, but older James Spader would have been better than. Younger James Spader, 95, not as menacing. Like James Spader now makes a great Redfoot.
You'd need somebody who's got a bit of menace, and James Spader does have that.
Oh, yeah. Did you watch that on The Blacklist? You ever seen that show?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I didn't notice anything about the music in this. Nothing, I mean, it fit the movie, but nothing jumped out.
It's a good score, nothing, it's not overtaking anything.
No, I don't think so either. What about issues with this movie? Like your leaps of logic, what do you think?
This one's tough because like we talked about, like we're being lied to the whole movie.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, there's things like the way we see him portrayed, they could not have possibly happened that way. But that's okay because like we realize at the end we're being lied to. So like, it is interesting to think about. Like we think about unanswered questions and stuff. It's like the whole thing is kind of unanswered. Like we know there ended up these bodies on the boat. Was there ever drugs? Was there ever money? How did it all come together? Like it... Whatever it is, Spacey Verbal just played us all. And, like, we believe what he wants us to believe. So it's tough to quibble with too much of, like, oh, that couldn't have happened or that. It's, like, that's the point.
Yeah.
Right.
I mentioned earlier how I thought the boat heist scene was a little.
Yeah. You know,
could have been a little better, I think. It seemed forced to me. It seemed a little rushed. And I just think they got sloppy as criminals towards the end.
Yeah.
And essentially got them all killed.
Keaton, like, telling Verbal to stay behind is very strange. Like everybody's there for the job. Like, he's the one that kind of got you in with this group in the first place. Like, why are you telling him to stay behind? Like, all of a sudden you got a conscience and you want someone to make it out. Like, that part was weird. But, again, we don't know if that's actually how it went down or what. But
well, yeah, and that ties into the next thing. I thought that Kuyan was just too gullible. Like, as much as he killed the role... Like, you're a horrible cop. It's
overconfident.
You know what I mean? Like,
no.
Like, you're over here. Yeah, total overconfidence. Like, you went in there already knowing, already deciding that you were like,
confirmation bias.
It's Keaton no matter what. I'm just going to get this guy to tell me what I want to know.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the wrong way to go into it.
I've already, you know? I already know it. I just want you to show me the work for it. And it's like, you're just setting yourself up.
He played into the hands. You know, he played into his hands. And it's too bad. Marty, I'm going to introduce something here for you.
Go ahead, hit me.
We're going to start ranking some of these villains, okay? In this case, we're looking at Kaiser Soze. So you want to, you know, we're looking at like a villain scale, okay?
Right.
So these are things I want you to think about. And I don't have a metric system for this. We've only done it once. I think speed was the first time we've done it thus far. So if you think about Kaiser Soze as the villain, like not Kevin Spacey. This is probably Kaiser, one and the same, right? So this is what you want to think about. This is a scale of 1 to 10. There's no... Here's what I think makes a good villain, like a movie villain, is like, what's their motivation? Like, why are they doing what they do? Are they the smartest guy in the room pretty much at all times? Do they have any kind of special skill? You know, maybe they're a bomb expert or maybe, you know, I don't know. Are they willing to kill people? Like, are they confident they're going to get away with it? Like, are they about to be set free, whether at the end of a movie, like in this case, he gets away with it. So that kind of gives that away. But a lot of times the villain gets caught. The hero always wins in most movies.
Yeah.
Right. In this case, he doesn't. So... He gets points for that. Is he menacing? I mean, we said the name Kaiser Soze alone. That's
right.
That's pretty menacing.
Yeah.
you know. Also, are they entertaining? Are they a worthy opponent for the hero? And this, I don't know if that really applies in this or not. Maybe, because they're not going against each other. But yeah, just like, is that someone that you fear?
I would give Kaiser Soze a hard 8.5 on the villain scale, and using your framework, 1. Is he the smartest guy in the room? The myth thereof. I'm not talking about Kevin Spacey and Verbal Kent. I'm talking about Kaiser Soze. Number 1, is he the smartest guy in the room? Absolutely. There's no doubt.
With a bullet.
Right. Second thing is he menacing? If you go into that movie and you listen to Verbal Kent talk about the myth of Kaiser Soze, he talks about It doesn't matter if you have numbers or whatever. You just have to have the will to do what the other guy won't.
There you go. He says
and
it.
So yeah. Kaiser Sose is the dude who has the will to murder Kevin Pollak's father in Arizona, to castrate somebody's nephew in wherever it is. Because he's talking to Kobayashi.
Yeah.
Kobayashi's doing the talking, saying, okay, you can kill me, but Edie Finnerman's going to come to a most something violation, you know, whatever he talks about, you know, gruesome violation. You're like, whoa, dude, come on. And so, yeah, Kaiser Sose gets a hard 8.5 for being a smart.
Okay.
But mostly, he's just meaner. He's just meaner and is ready to kill you and people who, what do you say? People who owe you money. You know, he's just got the will.
Every hardened criminal that knows of him, like, pees his pants at the very mention of his name.
No.
So, yeah.
8.5, and I don't know what 9 is, because Kaiser Soze, you put Kaiser Soze up against Darth Vader?
Oh, God.
Okay.
That's a different discussion, I think.
Okay, that's a tough one, but well, I'm not putting a bet down, because I know who's going to win that.
Well, but they're not fighting hand-to-hand, but someone like Vader, like, he's not the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, he's
menacing.
Losing points.
He's willing to kill, but he's not the smartest guy in the room. He's not entertaining. He's not making you laugh as he's doing his thing. You know what
we
I mean?
Didn't so really mention
he wasn't
it.
Picking beans in Guatemala.
Is that on the scale?
He may have been in a barbershop quartet.
He was in Skokie.
Not with that voice. But you know what? We kind of have, without directly saying it, but I love a movie where the good guys don't win. It's so rare. Usually you watch a movie and it's got this whole narrative structure of, okay, the bad guys are doing stuff, the good guy's on their trail, and in the end, the good guy figures it out. He catches them, he kills them, whatever. The good guys win. And it's so rare where you get a movie where the bad guy wins. Like, the bad guy gets away with it. He, like, at the end, like, you kind of, I don't know. I, like, obviously, Kuyan is the detective and he's trying to get to the bottom, but he's so overconfident and in his own abilities and that he's already cracked this thing. Like, When Verbal walks away at the end, it's like respect, like, wow, you did it. Like, I'm not mad. I'm like, man, they let him get away. It's like, holy crap, like, well done. Like, round of applause for you, sir.
Right.
So what do you think out of 10? What do you think about Kaiser Sose?
I'm with Mari. I'd say a 9. Like, I can't, I don't know. If I try to think of other movies with other villains that, like, I'd put above him, it's really tough because he really.
Well, no, I don't want you to do that. I want you just.
Oh,
like,
you don't?
Just
okay.
Based on this, like, here's what it is. And you can hold the right to change it as we come across other villains.
I'm going to go a 9. I love, more than anything in a villain, I love a good mastermind. I want the guy that can put all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle in place, pull all the strings, and get the outcome he wants. Like, he doesn't have to be the strongest guy. He doesn't have to be the best shot with a gun. Like, this is what I want. I want the cerebral mastermind that just pulls it off to a T. So he's, like, very, very high on the list for me.
Yeah, check it. Like, Hannibal Lecter was a serial killer who ate his victims, but bro got caught.
Right.
Yeah.
So
he was still having a good time, though. He was in jail, but he was enjoying himself.
He's drawing his pictures. He's doing fine.
He gains points for entertaining.
Dude, he's got a lot of production value. I'll give you that.
Well,
but your brother's behind bars. Sorry. Or plexiglass. Yeah. Whatever.
Does Verbal get extra points, like, as far as the entertaining part? Like, he's a cripple. He's, like, pathetic looking. Like, does he get extra points because he's putting on this front? Because of his acting, he breaks down in tears. He's whimpering. Like, I feel like he gets a little extra, but at the same time, like, I guess you don't want your villain to be, like, cowering in a chair away from the good guy.
No, I'm looking entertaining, like the Joker making a pencil disappear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's entertaining for me. Like, you're going to kill a guy. Oh, watch me put the pencil and jam in his head.
Speaking of him, it's almost a little similar, like, the boat scene of how they're all going down one by one, almost to that opening scene in The Dark Knight. I thought about that a little bit. How, like, obviously, they're not all killing each other. Kaiser Sose is killing them one by one. But, like, in The Dark Knight, like, he tells all of them, like, oh, he told me if I killed you, I'd get extra. And, like, they're all offing each other until only the Joker's left in the end.
Yeah.
They borrowed a little bit from Usual Suspects for that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I gave him a 9 out of 10 for the villain scale as well.
Solid.
You know, I feel that, and you were kind of touching upon it, he manipulates everyone in this movie to perfection. You know what I mean? And he had the patience to wait it out.
Yeah.
You know, planting seeds. I don't know how many, like, the opening, when they're in the room together in the lineup scene, Keaton knows Verbal Kint from, what, 6 months ago, they served time somewhere. Like, he played the long game from the beginning on this. Like, he's planting seeds everywhere. And he knew Kuyan would come after Keaton, and that's the way. Like, he just pulls all the right strings at the right time. And to me, and then at the very end, you said it, he got away with it.
Dude, like, the chauffeur drives him away.
Yeah, like, you didn't catch him, bro. Yeah, 9 out of 10 for me. Yeah, because it's the combination. It's mostly the Kaiser Soze piece of it, but, you know, the Kevin Spacey as that person did that. So there you go.
I've got one question that I'm thinking about now. Like, the whole story the whole time is, oh, nobody knows who Kaiser Soze is. Like, he goes on the boat to kill the one guy that could identify him. He gets in the car at the end with Kobayashi. And so, like, I'm assuming that's not his real name, but his lawyer, whatever he is, he knows who he is.
Yeah.
He's got it. He's getting away at the end. So I don't know what that means.
What's his lifespan?
Yeah. What, is he like his right-hand man, trusted confidant, or what? Like, because even he says, I think, when he's speaking to the other ones, like nobody knows who he is. I don't know who he is. Like, I take my orders, whatever. I carry him out. But, like, he's there. They're in the car together at the end. He's helping him get away from the scene. I don't know where I'm going with that, but, like...
Well, the myth is that nobody works for him twice. Like, none of these grunts work for him twice.
So he's...
That's his...
Once they park, that's it for... You know?
No, I think that's part of his crew. I think you're right.
Like, okay.
He probably has more people, and this is why a prequel needs to happen. Because he's going to have people he can trust, but then he doesn't trust people because they'll turn on him eventually.
Let's see more of that web and how they all connect. Yeah.
Yeah, like, but you got to have somebody to do stuff. He can't kill everybody. He doesn't overpower anybody.
Yeah.
So someone's going to deliver the message and say, hey, I need 10 guys for this job. Here's the pay or whatever.
The spokesperson for you.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my employee.
The public-facing figure.
Yep. So other than that, man, that's the show. So what other extra stuff did you find in your research? Anything interesting that...
We talked about a lot of stuff, like a lot of the behind-the-scenes facts and things like that. One thing is that Kaiser Soze, the story was based a little bit on a real killer, like the whole story that Verbal tells of how he killed his family because he didn't want him to live another day after what had happened there. Like, there was a guy, I think it was John List. Yeah, John List.
Yep.
He killed his wife, two daughters, and son, I think. Or I think there was five. Yeah. His whole family. And then, like, left. He left, like, all the bodies in the house, and he left and moved away and started a new life. And I think he was in Virginia. He went to Colorado. It was interesting reading about. But he's, like, sort of a famous... I don't know if serial killer is the right word, but he ended up being caught, and he's since, like, passed away in prison. But that was kind of the inspiration for the origin story of Kaiser Soze there, how he killed his family and everything. So
that guy went underground for 2 decades.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was, like, America's Most Wanted, I read, that, like, is how he got found out, that, like, one of his new neighbors, he was in Colorado now, they saw America's Most Wanted or one of those shows and showed him, as like, you know what, I think that's him. I think that story makes sense. And, like, she called the hotline or whatever, and they ended up getting him because of that. So you guys got anything interesting? I feel like we've covered so much, but any other nuggets that
the only other thing that I read was in the run-up to the movie being released, they put up movie posters that weren't the movie poster, but it just said, who is Kaiser Soze?
Oh, okay. So they're
putting that in up. Movie theaters as a marketing thing. And I, like, I would love to be in possession of one of those.
That
would be kind of cool. Putting the old bones.
You have Amazon? Is there one on Amazon that you can buy?
You
could be, with the right price, you could be in possession of one of those.
I'm on a very short leash as what I can put up on the wall in the bonus room anymore. So
nice.
You know, that does make me think of one thing I found out, is that all 5 of the actors in the crew were made to believe that they were Kaiser Soze. They were going to be the one in the end by, Bryan Singer. So they all acted in a way that they thought it was going to be them. And apparently when they first screened the movie, Gabriel Byrne was so sure that it was him, he, like, stormed out of the theater and confronted Singer in the parking lot.
He was mad.
He was pissed that he was like, I'm Kaiser Soze. Are you kidding me? So, he even got over on the actors in the movie.
That's
great.
I don't
feel so bad.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't.
That's great. Well, on the same vein of that, who's Kaiser Soze marketing campaign, Moe's Grill did that, where they had who is Kaiser Salsa?
Oh, that's right. All the names on their menu. That's right.
Yeah.
Who's Kaiser Salsa?
Yep.
That's dope.
And then the only thing I noticed in this movie just watching it was there was a couple scenes where Keaton wears, like, an ascot. I didn't get that fashion sense. You know, like Fred from Scooby-Doo? He's got a couple scenes as wearing that. I was like, all right, is it a personal choice or is this like part of the wardrobe? I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, but that was it. Anyways, awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for checking out The Usual Suspects with us because we love this movie. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for checking in and we'll catch you next time.